Holy scrolls, Batman! It's really exciting.
Bruce Wayne, Esper?
I'm Batman.
I am the priest.
Greetings, Robin's regulars, and welcome to Superstitious and Cowardly, a Batman podcast for the Warden of Saul. I'm Chris Winia.
And I'm John Pfeiffer. Ryan was kidnapped by space banditos.
Today we begin our look at the Silver Age with a comic John picked out all by himself. You know what I'm going to do with this issue, John?
What?
I'm going to hang it right over there on the refrigerator so everyone can see it.
Aww.
So what did he choose, you ask? Why, it was June 1950's issue of Batman, number 59, 10 years after the last time we saw him. So why Batman 59, John?
It has the man who replaced Batman, it has the Forbidden Cellar, and it has Batman in the future. And specifically, the man that replaced Batman has the first appearance of Deadshot, and Batman in the future is just goofy. I don't care about the man in the Root Cellar. It doesn't really matter so much. But overall, it just seems like a really fun issue.
So why'd you choose it, though?
It's got Deadshot in it.
Yeah, how'd you find it, though?
Oh, I literally just looked around 1950s because that's what I was doing when I was searching for it online, and I just found that one. The Batman of the Future, that cover, was super fun.
Okay. Why don't you describe the cover for us, then?
So the cover has a Batman and Robin in space in a bat plane that just has a cylinder, like, rocket on the back end of it. And all it is just Batman saying, the bat signal's on the moon. We're wanted back on Earth because radios don't exist, and it's super necessary. But it was fun looking. It was lighthearted, and I really wanted to go for something like that.
Earth has apparently also moved to another solar system that is full of planets and red space.
Yeah, it was a weird kind of a thing. Also, I noticed that when you look at the cover, Robin's driving.
So what's happening in the world of yesterday, June 1950? On June 20th, the Secretary of State, Dean Acheson, told a U.S. Senate committee that it was unlikely that North Korea would go to war with South Korea. Keep that in mind in like 30 seconds. On June 22nd, David Greenglass, a technician in the American nuclear program, was arrested and charged with spying for the Soviet Union. He implicated his sister and her husband, Ethel Rosenberry and Julius Rosenberry, as persons who recruited him to the espionage. He agreed to testify against both of them and would draw a reduced sentence because of it. The Rosenbergs, you may remember, would be ultimately tried and convicted and sentenced to execution for these crimes. For years, they were always touted as people that were innocent and just kind of swept up in the propaganda of the age.
Like whole McCarthyism kind of stuff.
Yeah, the whole McCarthyism. But later documents declassified from the Soviet Union did
confirm everything.
Definitely Julius was a spy and Ethel knew about it at the very least. And then remember what we said a couple seconds ago? Well, June 25th, 1950, the beginning of the Korean War. At 4 a.m., South Korea army bases near the border with North Korea where it came under fire without warning, and after 45 minutes, North Korean troops invaded and drove through the 38th parallel, starting the Korean War. As you can see, we're in an era of war again and McCarthyism, where we have a bunch of paranoia, which actually feeds into a couple of our other stories today.
The last couple episodes that we're talking about Robin's regulars and all the boy commando stuff about doing what you can and being vigilant, it even starts back then. That was a decade prior. It kind of shows like the span of this whole kind of idea being started.
So we're getting into the Silver Age. What do you know about the Silver Age, John?
I know it gets more fun. And Silver Age is basically it's when Earth 1 starts, the prime Earth kind of stuff. And everything before this was mostly Earth 2. That's as a whole, though. I know there's still some stuff that can be considered either way. But that's what I usually think about, is that whole Christ on infinite Earth. Like, this is where the starting point is.
So following the end of World War II, superhero comics started to wane as more hard-edged comics became popular. This is not just true in the comic book world, but also like in movies, we saw the rise of film noir and stuff like that. Because men were coming back from the war, and women also, you know, had their own hardships on the home front and on the front lines as well. So they came back and some wanted more sophisticated forms of entertainment. Now, I'm not saying like help cope with what they did, I meant they experienced during that time. But you can see what appealed to a lot of people during the war, what's like, oh, you got this person that has this great power, could end the war in an instant, right?
Right.
So we're coming back there, and maybe we're a little more cynical because we've lived through this war, and we've seen the devastation that has wrought.
That and like Silver Age stuff, you see a lot more space age things, at least at the beginning of it.
But we're talking about after World War II. It's like, so we see this rise in horror, crime, and moralistic romance comics that start dominating the market, with titles like Johnny Reb and True Murder Stories being top sellers.
Really?
No, those are Matt Groening's from The Simpsons. But yes, the crime and the horror, especially like the old Tales from the Crypt, which would later, you know, spin off into Mad Magazine and all that weird stuff.
Okay. Tales of Suspense and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Most superhero comics stopped being printed with the DC Trinity being the only three that were really going strong at DC. Then in 1954, Frederick Wertham published the book Seduction of the Innocent, which suggests that comics, with the graphic depictions of sex, violence, drugs, and other irresponsible behaviors, his words, were the primary responsible for the rise in juvenile delinquency. Just for the record, sociologists tend to think that it was as a result of the post-war baby boom. It's the reason that we had a rise in juvenile delinquents, because there was a population boom that we hadn't had before. So anyways, dang, have you ever heard of Seduction of the Innocents?
No. That's new to me.
Seduction of Innocence is very important at this time because, well, it was all kind of like the research wasn't really huge and stuff like that. Most famously, the book postulates that Batman and Robin are living in a homoerotic lifestyle.
Yes. I've already made dick jokes.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a mountain of out-of-context panels that kind of support this. You really could argue that this was subtext at best and innocence of the time, most likely. However, his scapegoatery was still tempting in the final years of the MacArthur era, and thus the comic book code authority was put in place to watch the Watchmen. With science fiction becoming more and more popular in the public consciousness due to the emerging dick-measuring contest that would later be known as the Space Race, DC decided to relaunch some of their older classics with a more sci-fi bent. This started in Showcase 4 in October 1956 with The Flash, and is generally considered to be the official start of the Silver Age.
Green Lantern after that. We have a few that stayed
instead
the same.
Instead of a Magic Lantern, we have Space Cop.
Yeah, it's supposed to be technically, even though they don't really ever explain the science-based, that sort of a thing. And they really do move towards space for at least a little while. Man, we're not quite there to the Silver Age yet, but I cannot wait. Like I said before, in this episode, we'll be talking about Batman 59, the man who replaced Batman, which gives us the first appearance of Deadshot, the forbidden root cellar that brings us Grandma's canning from beyond the grave, and Batman in the future shows us the look at board shorts that never came to be. This is Batman 59, the man who replaced Batman.
So now let's take a look at Deadshot, the greatest assassin in the comic book universe. Asterix. There are several. Deathstroke, David Kane, Lady Shiva, just to name a few DC Batman-related ones. I actually don't really think of Deadshot as a Batman villain, because he is really a Suicide Squad character. Like one of my favorite DC villains, Captain Boomerang, he's not really a Flash villain anymore, he's a Suicide Squad. Ironically, this is Deadshot's only appearance for another 27 years until he's reintroduced in his most well-known costume during the Strange Apparitions arc.
It's that long?
Yes. There's that comic, and we're definitely going to be talking about that one. He appeared here and there as antagonist killing people with trick shots for a while until he was made a full-blown character in the page of Suicide Squad. There, his bright red outfit was given explanation as being used to make him more of a target. It seems Floyd had a death wish. When Floyd was younger, he lived in a rich yet abusive household where his parents favored his older brother George over him. Despite this, he idolized his brother. When his mother grew tired of his husband's abusive ways towards her, she charged her children with killing the man. Floyd protested and was locked in a shed only to break out and stop his brother, who had already shot and paralyzed the father, before finishing the job. It seemed in the scuffle he caused the gun to actually go off. He killed the brother he loved to save the father he hated. It also explains the reason why an unstoppable shooter was unable to kill one man. He saw Batman as a substitute for his brother, and was always unable to finish the job. The Deadshot of Suicide Squad was quite different from the deadpan snarker from modern comics such as Secret Six. He was serious and unhinged. My first exposure to him, however, was through Secret Six, where he was the cocky asshole member of the team.
That's my first experience of him, too, and he's just great.
Deadshot has appeared in Justice League, Smallville, and Arrow with the squad as well in the Batman AMA, Gotham Knights, which was loosely connected to the Nolanverse. He's in one of the segments. He was in a few Arkham games and is playable in Injustice 2. And of course, he was portrayed by Will Smith in the polarizing big screen adaptation of Suicide Squad. Will Smith's performance was not one of the problems with the movie.
It wasn't, but I really wish it was somebody else for Deadshot. Like, Will Smith in the movie? Fantastic. That's fine. But as Deadshot, it didn't feel right to me.
Oh no, I thought it worked great. It's kind of like who played Harley Quinn?
Margot Robbie.
She did a great job. But yeah, it's just the movie would just needed a...
It needed like another pass through or something like that.
We could debate for a while what was wrong with
could.
That.
We could. I'm not going to get into this thing.
So without much further ado, The Man Who Replaced Batman, written by David Van Reed, pencils by, I didn't read these beforehand, did I? Lou Schwartz and Bob Kane, with inks by Charles Paris. And John, since you chose this, why don't you take us through?
So our first page in the issue is just the introduction with the Dead Sea Scrolls intro that we're used to. And it just says, where I, Deadshot, have proved my ability as crime fighter beyond reasonable doubt, whereas I have also proved in direct competition to be more efficient and reliable than Batman, I hereby petition the people of Gotham City to recognize me officially as the man who replaced Batman. And Batman and Robin are chained up on a bullseye. Deadshot's just shooting the lit bat signal, effectively showing he wants to dismantle their career. And that's the coolest that it gets. So Deadshot's current costume we already see in the first page, and it's just him wearing a top hat and a tux, and then it has like a little Western sort of a theme to it, just a little bit.
It's he looks odd. Like Arsène Lupin.
Does he?
He does, actually.
So maybe that's what it's going to be. And
he's just a gentleman adventurer.
Gentlemen about town.
About. So we start out with Batman and Robin on vacation, and that's it.
So our first panel in the actual start of the page, Batman and Robin are on it. You don't even see their faces. They're just on a steamboat somewhere, and they're going on vacation. They have two criminals on the loose, Detroit Kid and Trigger Rhodes. And instead of finishing up that one case before they go on vacation, like, crime will wait for us. We'll just hop to it. It's going to be a quick vacation.
We cut to a mansion where Dapper Floyd Lawman... Lawton. He's going to be a lawman in this episode. Practicing a bunch of trick shots, shooting over his shoulder, hitting two targets at once. Well, his butler just gives him all kinds of admiration.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you've got to put your cigarette out, Stevens. Don't worry, I'll do it. And he holds a mirror over his shoulder and just obnoxiously just shoots that thing. And they specify that the room has been refitted to be a shooting range. You're still, like, shooting furniture and putting holes and stuff.
Yeah, he don't care, though. So he goes out after listening to the police report, and he's able to stop some criminals by running away by knocking a lamppost on him.
Right, he just shoots, like, the bulb that encloses the light, and it knocks on top of one guy's head, so he's now Mysterio. And then while the other guy runs away, he shoots some scaffolding from a building and just lands on the guy, so he's got a broken spine.
He then declares himself the Riviera Kid.
The cops are doing the same thing that they do with Batman at the beginning of, gee willikers, you're pretty great. But it's not just you're pretty great, it's, wow, you've just been running around town just shooting things? We're just going to assume that you're no threat at all.
It shows how different things are now 10 years later, in that...
They would have ran him down.
Batman is... recognized by the police now, and they're just like, well, I don't know, your Batman doesn't use guns and you can't do that. And it's like, well, he's a vigilante that has the authorization of the police department. Why can't I do that? He actually says that to Gordon, who's just like, I guess you can.
Everything's legal. I have a permit for my guns. It doesn't mean you can just go running around downtown shooting things either. That's not how that works.
But it seems he does, because we get a montage of him just basically shooting various things.
I need to talk about this. Like, when he's talking to Gordon, and Gordon's like, fine, you can go ahead and you can go out and shoot people. He says, for instance, Batman never uses a gun. Really? Really? There's been covers where he's just holding a gun. Panels where it's just a smoking gun. He literally shot a vampire Dracula thing that couldn't make up its mind about what he wanted to be with a silver bullet.
No, he barely used a gun, though. Really?
It's like, you know, just 6, 7, 8 times. He just killed some people, that's all.
Go back and listen to our episodes. So they come back from vacation, and the bat signal shows up, but it's a bullseye, because apparently he's a quick worker, and he's already gotten his own.
They're listening to, like, police radio and everything. We're just back in time. Hurry, Robin. The signal will appear in just a moment. And that's when they see the bullseye, and they're all pissed off that crime and the city didn't wait for them. It's just such a weird thing to just expect of the city.
So they start teaming up with Deadshot, and they automatically don't trust him because he's horning in on their territory. We see like a bunch of them together solving crimes, but he gets this hint that Deadshot's not on the level because he had claimed to Gordon that in the war he had injured his leg. That's why he couldn't just become a police officer.
Yeah.
But he went through a metal detector and it didn't go off. So Batman's like, oh, this guy's up to no good.
And I can kind of see it because he doesn't know who the guy is. And yeah. We know Batman to be more suspicious. I mean, in current versions of him, he's very suspicious, and I guess maybe these are the first hints where it happens more often. But I love that the reason why he went through a metal detector is that they stopped to a prison for routine interrogation. You let Batman and Deadshot just walk in for an interrogation? Like, they hand over weapons and everything, but you don't have to be, qualified for that part at the very least? Something? Anything?
So we get some more... It's basically suspicious activities.
Ooh.
They're going around fighting people. Deadshot, like, shoots a bit of his own pocket out because he had a gun concealed in there. And Batman picks it up and finds out that it's a fabric that is, like, super rare in Gotham.
Yeah, like, this is our chance. We're going to analyze it.
He goes to the place where it was sold, and they're like, well, I couldn't tell you who did that. And he's like, yes, but you could. You have this machine that takes photographs of people to tailor them.
You got this app that has some mirrors that just measure somebody, right? And they're like, yeah, we got this app, and we have records of it.
And so they set up a bunch of cameras and take the same pictures of him.
I love this, though. Like, when they're setting up, they say, like, okay, so instead of having mirrors in Wayne Manor, we're gonna set up a bunch of cameras. And then on the wall in the background, it says hidden camera. I just like to assume that that is an actual sign on the wall that just points down to a hidden camera. As ridiculous as that sounds, it just filled me with a little bit of joy. And as Bruce Wayne, they called Deadshot and a couple police officers, and Bruce Wayne's like, well, I think there's a time bomb. I need you to check this room out for me. And nothing comes of it, but that's how they get their measurements to compare with the business that had the window mirror app for fitting.
So they have figured out who he is, and Batman's a complete dick about it. And, well, they're at a play, I guess, and he just shot somebody in the air.
They stopped a convict. He has escaped, and he was at a playhouse. I don't think there's a play
going on. I don't know why he was, like, in the rafters, though. He just goes, hey, I know your name. And he's like, so what? And he's like, I know what you're up to, too. And he's like, no, you don't.
Yeah, like, he can play dumber than he does, but instead he's like, oh, fine, you know who I am? Well, I'm just going to shoot you by mistake anyway. Everybody gets one mistake.
But no one will suspect you that I shot you.
Because it could just happen in the crossfire. Okay, I can buy that a little bit. He's issuing a threat. Accidents happen. I can see it. So later on, they are stopping more crimes, presumably. And at one point, Deadshot goes to make a phone call in a phone booth instead of going to Gordon's office. And that is the time where they decide that Batman and Robin need to go in the closet. So they decide to listen in on Deadshot's phone call from a closet that's behind the phone booth. For some reason, Batman has a wine glass at the ready to listen in on the wall. He's like, a wet-rimmed wine glass will help you listen in on the other side. Where did he get that cup?
He stole it.
It's utility belt. So they discover Deadshot has already put plans in place to distract the police in one location while another man robs a bank.
So Batman tells Gordon, and they're going to stank out the bank, and nothing happens. And Gordon dresses him down. He says, hump, let's get out of here. Batman, you have a lot to explain.
He's holding
up. Oh, I've been tripped.
And think about it. And he calls him a little bit of a prima donna and everything earlier when he had these suspicions of not having that metal plate in his leg and everything and sprinkled out throughout the issue. And Gordon just doesn't give Batman any credit. He's been with the city like 10 years at this point. Well, canonically, I have no idea, but he's been with the city a while and he gives him no credit whatsoever. Gordon suspends his belief so many times, but the one time where he really should, he won't have it. He's like, oh, no, you're just jealous and you're just not the new girl in town and all this other stuff. And at one point, even Robin like says, you know, Gordon's fair-haired child is really making it look bad.
Deadshot knows that he's tricked Batman. And he basically says, well, now I'm ready to shoot you. So next time I see you, I'm going to shoot you. And so Robin's like, oh, no, he's going to shoot you. And he'll get away with it, too. And he's like, no, you don't get a pass.
I like the way that Robin said that. He's going to shoot you and he'll get away with it. He doesn't go like, he's going to shoot us. He's like, Batman's going to get shot. I'll be fine. No, he might shoot you, too.
So a few nights later, Bruce rushes home, and Dick was like, where have you been? He's like, don't worry about it. I got to answer the bat signal. Just stay here. I don't bother with it. And so they go to
a warehouse boat house on the waterfront.
And he's like, haha, I faked this whole thing. Now I'm going to murder you here. I'm going to make it look like an accident.
They go there alone, and he's going to make it an accident? How can he make that sound plausible? Wouldn't it be easier if a bunch of people were around and he just missed a shot as opposed to just shooting him with no witnesses?
So Batman, like, gets suicidal. He's like, go ahead, shoot me. I don't care.
It's like point-blank range.
You ain't gonna do it. You're too much of a pussy. Look at your handshake. You've lost your nerve. And he's like, I'll take careful aim and kill you.
He's really goading him, too. It's great.
And then he misses. And so Batman just starts mocking him, and he tries to shoot him, and he misses.
And they're going across. They're going across the waterfront, up and down like the Gotham Bridge. And at some point, someone's going to be a witness to Deadshot just shooting at Batman. And they never address that either. And it gets to the point where
Batman mentally destroys him.
Yeah, he does. Like, Deadshot knows, I see these bullets landing in the water and nearby areas, but why isn't it hitting you? He keeps ragging on him and ragging on him and ragging on him until he just breaks down and Batman cuffs him and takes him to Gordon. And he explains how he did this to Deadshot.
Basically, he moved the sights on all his guns.
That seems like a pretty lame excuse. With their point-blank range, I don't think that sight means anything.
Also,
at that
point, if you're like the best shooter, you're not going to necessarily need that.
Or wouldn't you check it before you go out? real quick.
Yeah.
12 hours. There's like 12 hours between when he changes the sights on the gun and when they actually go out. What happens to, you know, checking his equipment regularly or having a backup set of guns? Anything could happen at this point. So Batman's still taking a real big chance on not getting killed.
In Secret Six, they kind of do a callback to this, where he retells.
That's how I knew about it. That's why I kind of went back a little bit.
Where he retells this, and in it, he says he just put blanks in instead of doing the shots.
So that
so it was a little more believable.
They made him a little... that Batman did that himself?
Yeah, he said that Batman made it blanks instead of messing with the shots.
So they retconned it a little bit.
So they retconned it, so it made a little more sense.
It still makes Deadshot sound like his career started out as being more of a puss. But it was fun. Like, I like that someone tries to discredit Batman in this kind of a long con.
Yeah, it was a good one. But like I said, wave goodbye to Deadshot, because we ain't going to see him for quite some time.
27 years, jeez.
Unless I did my math wrong. I might have done my math wrong. 77. Though.
This would not be the first time that anyone's gotten their math wrong. If Chris has gotten his math wrong, you can always email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter and tell us how terrible Chris is.
All right, let's move on to this
Batman 59, The Forbidden Cellar.
Next in the issue is The Adventures of Captain Tootsie in The Show Must Go On. Captain Tootsie is at the fair with his friends. It's a giant guy with a big yellow T on his shirt.
I didn't even read this. I didn't think we would.
And they're watching the... I'm actually just reading it off there. I didn't write it down. And they're watching trapeze artists. The rope snapped, and the trapeze artist is about to fall off. Luckily, Captain Tootsie says, "I'm glad I had that Tootsie roll," and run towards... This is actually what it says. Runs towards the rope and grabs it. These bitches decide to finish their act while Tootsie is holding on to the rope. And so it ends with him saying, "Tootsie Roll did it. They're wonderful for some quick energy. Here, have some. Thank you, Captain Tootsie. You're always on the job. You saved our lives. We work without safety net. Great work, Captain Tootsie. Yummy." And then it just ends with Captain Tootsie saying, "Listen, fellas, girls, it's easy when you have the energy and strength. Better eat that Tootsie Roll."
It's not that you read that. It's not that you just read an ad from the issue that we're reading. It's that you read the whole thing, and it was that it was called Captain Tootsie.
It was called Captain Tootsie, and he's claiming that if you eat a Tootsie Roll, it'll give you strength and energy.
Well, I mean, I guess you'll give you like a sugar rush for a little bit, but you're crashing. Thank you. That was amazing.
All right, let's go on.
This is Batman 59, Story 2, The Forbidden Cellar.
But before we go on to that, let's take a look at another first appearance that we missed. In 1943, one of the most enduring aspects of the Batman mythos debuted in Batman 16. Batman gained a butler named Alfred Bengal, a fat, clean-shaven man who fancies himself a detective. He presents himself as the son of Wayne's former butler, Jarvis, and after figuring out who Batman and Robin really are, he was made a member of the team. Alfred's role was originally that of an annoyance to the dynamic duo, as most Golden Age sidekicks would be. He bumbled into their adventures, trying to help while usually being a hindrance. Alfred was given a makeover in 1944 to look more like the actor that portrayed him in the 1943 Batman serial. So the person that we kind of see as Robin, as Alfred now, is based on the serial Alfred, not the comic book Alfred, because the other guy was fat and clean-shaven.
Okay, so this guy's slender, balding, and all that stuff. So the Alfred that I recognize...
Yeah, he came from the serial.
Okay.
Also from that serial is the Bat's Cave, which they just named the Bat Cave.
That's so much better. So we missed like a couple nice things, but I wanted to be out of the 40s so bad.
But none of that is actually in this episode, which is called The Forbidden Cellar. I couldn't find out who wrote it, but pencils and inks were by Jim Mooney.
We don't do much for research anyway. Actually, you do quite a bit of research. I'll take that
back. I do a fair amount of research. I just couldn't find it.
Fair enough. So the issue begins with an overdramatic page. A man is climbing out of a cellar with a knife. And the door of the cellar says, no mortal man is allowed to enter. And this thing was boarded up in haste, but the guy had enough time to like pin a sign on the inside of it. Instead of the outside of the door, you think that'd be like a, you know, do not open till doomsday scenario. You want that sign on the outside.
Dead inside?
That's like a Walking Dead.
I don't watch the Walking Dead.
So I don't either. Again, if you want to send hate mail.
Because it's like, don't dead enter inside or something like that.
Yeah, like if you read it in a different order, it's like, I don't know what this means.
Doesn't make any sense.
But the issue starts off with just a big splash page of a man coming out with a knife. And it says, "To this day, people believe in certain things on earth that are cursed to be unmolested, least doomed to descend on he who..." would scorn a grave warning. It's really confusing. There's a lot of superstitious things in here, and sometimes some of that stuff's real.
So don't worry, it's not.
I want you to describe this first page, or this first panel, but when you do, can you please give me a little bit of Newspaper Joey?
Some story. 50 years ago, this millionaire had a vision that a deadly evil lurked in his cellar. So he locked it up and was never entered again. And to this day, people believe there's something fateful going on. Fearful. Shit.
I just really like that. Millionaire eccentric leaves
haunted estate to college.
Sometimes, I'm surprised I can read some of that print.
So let's just skip ahead. Yeah. They decide to open it.
So a man, I gotta talk about it just a little bit. A millionaire guy died. He had boarded up his cellar because he thought there was something evil in it.
50 years ago he did that.
50 years ago he did. So this is 1900, like exact. Yeah, 1900, because this is the 1950s kind of.
Oh, and keep in mind, like, this has no bearing on the story at all.
Not really.
This was just something that happened.
Yeah, a guy boarded up a thing. He was superstitious about a thing that was evil
and cowardly.
He was superstitious and cowardly. I'm going to add a clap noise in there. Hey, John in the future, add a clap noise in there for me. And he was superstitious. He boarded it up. He died. He donates the house and the cellar to the local college that Bruce Wayne's a board member on. And they decide to hold a press conference to open the cellar and dispel any rumors. And they're going to use the site to build a library. Why they have to go ahead and open the cellar and have this whole thing, I have no idea, because they're going to build over the site anyway. It has no bearing.
I think they're trying to do it for publicity because they have a reporter go down. And then they have a scientist and they ask him, like, so what do you think about this superstitious reaction, scientist? And he's like, it's preposterous.
Oh, that's Vincent.
That we must go through all these this just to expose a silly superstition.
That's the same guy that actually booked the reporter, so why he's being all mouthy and mean about it, I have no idea. It's really backhanded for him.
But the reporter comes out, and he's gone mad, and he just starts attacking people with a shank of wood.
And real quick, Batman, or it's Bruce Wayne, he says this in, like, all caps and with a couple exclamation points, so I assume he's yelling this, we gotta nab him quick as Batman and Robin, everybody, we gotta nab him, we're gonna be Batman and Robin. And he says it really loud, and eventually they go and get him, and he's climbing the roof of this observatory, and while Robin's like, hey, we better climb up and go over, Batman's like, no, that's a stupid idea, we're gonna go and we're gonna open the door to this observatory. So the roof opens up and the guy basically breaks his spine.
So he's apparently okay, despite the fact they fell quite a bit. But it seems that a college student went down in all the confusion, and he comes back up with a knife.
So, like, the cops really suck, because they can't hold anybody down at all. So the kid comes out with a knife, and he immediately runs into the mansion. And he's basically like a Scooby-Doo kind of a chase, very briefly. Batman's chasing the guy, and the guy's like, you'll never catch me! And he keeps going back and forth.
Yeah, they do the hallway thing.
And suddenly, the guy has a mace, and he runs up to Batman, and he hits him in the head with it.
But luckily, Batman has gotten into the habit of always wearing two uniforms.
What? That's like wearing two pairs of underpants just in case I have an accident. It doesn't work.
So he put the cowl on. Did we even mention what he did? He put the cowl on a knight, like a suit of armor, and that's what he hit?
Yeah, he put his extra costume on the knight. Like, he put the gloves on him, too.
He
put the gloves and the cape and cowl on him, but not the rest of the outfit. I don't know why he bothered with the gloves. And the guy, you know, took the dummy bait, and Batman grabs him, and they subdue him pretty quick, and they give him to the cops. But the whole idea of wearing two costumes, just in case, like, I understand having two, like, at the rate, like, one extra one in the Batmobile or something, in case, like, gets torn, or you have a bullet hole in it, and you have to replace the Kevlar or whatever, that kind of thing. But just don't wear... Why wear two sets of clothes over top of each other?
It's like the Futurama episode where they become superheroes and Leela rips off her outfit to reveal that she's wearing her superhero outfit underneath. Then she rips that off and she's got her normal clothes under that. And she's like, I dressed in layers. So it seems that the guy that suggested all this wanted to get to the bottom of himself. So he knocked out the guard and went down into the cellar.
Yeah, and he does this while... Everybody else has pretty much reconvened at police headquarters, and Batman and Robin have gone to testify at night court for some reason. Like, I don't know why night court had to be a thing. Note to John, please insert Night Court theme song briefly in this.
I was thinking about Night Court jokes, but I only know the characters' names. I don't know anything else about
it. I remember an episode I watched very briefly where the judge got locked into a safe and it was Halloween and they couldn't get out until the end of the episode. That's all I remember.
It was a two-parter, obviously. So the dean comes out and he's going crazy too. Oh, sorry.
That's Vincent. Vincent goes in, comes the professor out. That organized the original press briefing and everything.
Yeah, Mr. Price comes out and he shoots the dean, and then he just goes on a rampage.
And it's presumed that whenever anybody went down the cellar and they came out with whatever weapon they had, it was in the cellar. Like, the guy had a thing of wood or whatever. The other guy had a knife. Okay, I can buy that stuff being in the cellar. What's a gun doing down there? Like, he's afraid of the evil spirits, but he's going to leave a gun so they have a way to defend themselves if he ever has to go back in there? What's going on?
So irony has hit the cigar factory as it is currently on fire right now. And so he runs towards that.
And Batman and Robin eventually get on the scene. They've chased him over to that site.
They beat him up, but not before noticing that he's brandishing a stick that's on fire, but he's put a towel around it so he doesn't burn his hand.
And the cops are like, oh, that's really convenient. He might be crazy, but he's smart enough not to burn himself. Don't know why they're worried about that.
So they send him to Arkham. And I'd continue.
It's a sanatorium. They don't even call it Arkham yet.
But I would continue, but we have an ad for the Popsicle Hall of Fame.
Please read this. I'm going to turn my volume down just so I'm not blasting things. Go ahead.
Oh, am I actually going to read this? So if you've ever seen, like, Hell, it's the Popsicle Hall of Fame mascot, who is Joey Fisher. He's a 12-year-old boy and a real hero. He sells papers. He pushes some kids out of the way of a truck. And apparently he got his name in the paper, so that makes him a Popsicle Hall of Fame guy.
And he gets popsicles and fudgicles and creamsicles, and he's the best.
So, you know, push people out of the way of trucks.
Hey, can we talk about official Big League Bazooka Joe gum?
Yeah, kids, get the swell official league ball for free.
Okay, we're done with that one.
Yeah, we are. That one's not crazy like the other one. And actually, the other one's only crazy because of the visuals, because, like, the mascot for that is insane. He kind of looks like who's the I don't think it's Howdy Doody, but he's got like the rosy cheeks and stuff, and he's got like a band leader's uniform on with popsicles on the top.
I think Howdy Doody does that too in bits. I don't think he does his main outfit. If anybody has a vast knowledge of Howdy Doody,
don't plug again. Okay, anyways. So, Batman decides, fuck this shit, I'm going to go into the cellar.
Can you please read, as Newspaper Joey, just the headline of the newspaper?
Batman to investigate cellar. Intrepid lawman risks career to learn the secrets which has driven three men mad. So, they decide that the best thing to do is to put up precautions and put a net over him.
Yeah, like they have cops at the ready to restrain him, and they actually have a little bit of foresight, and that's nice. I'm going to applaud that.
So he runs out. He's in a murderous rage. They drop the net. And the next day, the Daily Clark, apparently. Batman insane. Take it to sanitarium. Gotham City's greatest loss. Whole nation agog over mystery cellar. Governor alerts. I'm not even doing the voice anymore.
You can kind of do like a weird in-between voice of Newspaper Joey. I just want you to keep doing that whenever we see a newspaper headline, like in perpetuity.
Fair enough.
Batman runs out of the cellar. He's restrained. He's in a sanitarium. Over a few panels, it's revealed that the first, like, two or three people that were affected are starting to regain their sanity.
And they don't remember anything.
They blacked out. They don't remember anything. And even goes to Vincent, talking to a doctor, and says, of course, Professor, you face a technical homicide, but they're not going to convict you. You were in a temporarily insane state.
It'd be like if you were, like, a crime fighter and you accidentally shot another crime fighter. We're not going to convict you of that murder because, obviously, it was an accident.
That never happened.
That would never happen.
No. So the next day, they are in, I assume, Night Court, because that's the only time that Batman can make it.
They're always in a court for some reason.
This is super drawn out and super unnecessary.
I don't know why we're like always in a court. It's like,
he can tell the cops this before this trial even starts.
Are we putting like the cellar on trial, though?
Yeah,
like, everything they do is describing it in Night Court.
Let's say there's a DA or whatever. He could just be like, okay, we're not going to press charges. And that could be it. Like, there doesn't need to be this whole proceeding and everything. And if Batman's going to make a show like he's going to do, he could have done it before a trial even started. And even then, they do this the next day. They're not going to wait a week or something.
So anyways,
the most efficient court system
Batman
ever.
Batman busts in, says that Professor Price wasn't insane. He faked the whole thing.
And he can prove it.
He can prove it.
And he can only partially prove it if you think about it. Because he says that Vincent and his assistant plan to kill the dean because the dean was kind of on their trail for misappropriation of funds. They're embezzling a lot. Vincent realizes that, okay, we have this root cellar that's going to be opened up, and it has this whole haunted past. I'm going to put this psychedelic mushroom down there, and we're going to put the psychedelic mushroom down there, and it's going to drive whoever comes in there crazy, and, you know, I'll eventually get my chance to go down there too, and then when I get out, I'm going to kill the dean, and I'll be able to get away with it scot-free. And Batman's able to prove the mushroom, like, he grabs that out of there, and he's wearing precautions. How he describes a conversation with his assistant, I have no idea how he knows that.
I wanted to make a Mr. Miracle joke when he said scot-free. So Batman figured out that he wasn't crazy because he put the rag over, as no sane man would. And he also saw that he had nose filters. And so he went down into the cellar, noticed that there was a mushroom down there, and I guess just put something over it to stop himself from going crazy.
You don't see him wearing like a respirator or a mask or anything, so he sure went crazy the first time he went down there.
He just says, I'll just kill its fumes and take it to the crime lab for analysis. You can't kill fumes.
Basically, you know, okay, I took the mushroom, we proved it. We assume Vincent gets his comeuppance, and then Batman and Robin keep the mushroom, the psychedelic mushroom, in case they want a good trip later.
Yeah, because it's all about,
and they put
trophies.
It in the trophy, and they put it in the trophy room. I just like the idea that Batman's just keeping a mushroom just in case he wants to hang out later, just have a good time.
Wow, boys and girls, amazing. Straight Arrow, wow. Nabisco Shredded Wheat. Never mind. In our last story, we were introduced to a character who appeared often in this time, but never made the leap to the modern era, save for a few appearances. Professor Carter Nichols was introduced in 1944's Batman number 20, where he hypnotized Bruce, and I put Robin down here, but I don't think that he went as Robin. Probably was, you know, Dick at the time.
Yeah, he doesn't know who these people
are. It's like, yeah. Bruce, and this is Robin, the boy wonder. Oh, how do you know him? It's a long story. We're gay lovers. Haven't you read Seduction of the Innocent? He sent them back in time to Roman times. Apparently hypnotizing them really sent themselves through time. The professor would reappear in around 20 stories, sending our heroes and others to such places as Camelot, the court of Kublai Khan with Marco Polo, meeting the Three Musketeers, and even the real events that inspired Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Two of those are also Doctor Who stories. The professor stopped showing up entirely before the 80s, save for an episode of The Brave and the Bold show, and he also made an appearance in Grant Morrison's Batman run called Time and the Batman, which tells the story of his death in three different times. So stare deeply into my eyes. You're going back in time to 1950, in the Batman of the Future, written by Bill Finger, pencils by Bob Kane and Lou Schwartz, and inks by Charles Paris.
So the issue starts off with Batman and Robin being just in the middle of a case and thwarting the Joker for the umpteenth time. And they say, Joker, why do you do this?
It said that it was because... He says that he inherited it from his ancestors a century ago. And the reason that he inherited this was there were famous clowns.
My ancestral clowns made me this way. It's such a bullshit. Is this the first kind of glimpse that we have of the Joker's, like, multiple different stories of how he came to be and stuff?
No.
No?
I don't think so. So they decide to go to their buddy, Professor Nichols.
With his time science!
And despite the fact that he hypnotizes them... He's also in the laboratory with a coat and everything.
He also has powers. Like, they explain that it's powers, not science. But it's still time science.
So he sends them to...
the future. And he's like, well, we want you to send us to the past. Okay, but you know I've been experimenting with the future. No, we don't want that. And he's like, okay, you're getting tired. You're getting sleepy. You're going 100 years into the future. Ah, shit. And instead of recalling them, Batman and Robin are going to be spending like a week in the future. It is 2050.
All right, so they show up and... So everybody's wearing, like, gaudy outfits and capes.
Everyone's wearing board shorts and, like, weird antenna helmets. And they're, like, they're football players. It's just really weird.
What do you mean by board shorts?
They're just those little cut-off shorts and everything. They're, like, board shorts.
They look like bicycle shorts to me.
I think board shorts is a thing.
Okay, I don't
think
it is.
Board shorts is a thing.
So anyways, they grab somebody that looks exactly like the Joker and stop him from chasing after somebody.
And everyone starts freaking out. It's like, what are you doing? Police, grab these men. And the police come and they stop them. And we saw you two grabbing Chief, and I can't even say that. Can you say that?
Rokager.
Rokager. Because if you're a future descendant, it's just their name spelled like backwards. Or not even backwards, it's like a word jumble.
Also, this posits that not only does the Joker have sex at some point, but falling into acid has
reproductive capabilities.
Damaged his seed to the point that it turns his offspring's skin white and hair green.
Yeah, it's not even a deformity. It's just how his genetics are.
So they are arrested, but there's a big mural of Batman, and so they say, oh,
we can prove that we're Batman and Robin from the past.
Because chin dimples are the same on people. They're like fingerprints.
It's a real thing.
Is it?
It's a real thing. I asked Tina, my wife, and she's an esthetician, so she knows a lot of skin stuff. And I asked her if that was a real thing. It totally is. I had to go yell at a barking dog. So you can change the size of pores, you know, if they're open and closed and all that, but you can't change their overall position. So it's not necessarily as accurate as fingerprints, but it's definitely a way that you could have at least a reasonable idea of for identification.
So their job done, they go home, the end.
You really want this issue to be over. When they do hold that magnifying glass to Batman's chin and everything to compare pores, it's really chiseled. He's got a stupid old grin on his face and everything. And I really like it, actually.
So the man that Joker was chasing after, well, what was it? Ray Jarrett?
I think Zero. He was chasing Zero.
Who was a space pirate.
So Batman's like, you know, I'm really sorry that you lost this guy. If there's anything I can do to help make up for it, well, you displaced people from the past that have no idea of the future. If you could stop these space pirates for me, that would be great.
And so they go to a factory where...
they go to the Comet Factory, which is the most common ship that is being raided by pirates. There's also, like, Meteor and another brand that doesn't even matter. And...
Haley's,
thank you. And they go undercover. The Joker gets some jobs. And I really like this, because they get them jobs, and the guy's like, you two, why are you wearing these masks? It's protective gear. What about the capes? That too. What about this 10-year-old boy? Is he allowed to work in a factory? Sure, why not?
And they're all wearing the same outfit, which is,
like, beachwear.
Underwear and...
beachwear with long sleeves.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stupid antennas. It's really like an old space serials thing of the time. Like, they're really taking from or borrowing from, like, little 15-minute news... not news, but little 15-minute movies that show in between actual movies.
So it seems that the guy that is in charge is Mr. Milkman. And he...
I was thinking Mole Man.
It's Mill Man, but Mill-man. I'm just going to call him Milkman. So Dairy Farm is almost killed by one of the ships that is going to crash onto him on the conveyor belt. But Batman, who's never flown a spaceship before, puts the brakes on and saves him.
Yeah, like, they happen to be in the ship while it's on the assembly line at the same time, which that assembly line has to be so big to actually be able to, that conveyor belt has to be that big to transport a ship that size, which is amazing on its own. But he throws those thrusters on to save him so the ship doesn't crash into him. But you see how much fire kind of shoots out of the front from those thrusters? I imagine they just burn him alive instead.
So, three people knew that the old man was in front of there, so they now have their three suspects, so they're going to watch out for the guilty party.
Yeah, because no one else in this factory could possibly have the ability to do this whatsoever.
So, it cuts to, and this is really weird, a guy passed out on a ship because he didn't have the right batteries for his flashlight. Oh, wait, that's an advertisement. Okay, so...
they really blend these in. Like, if you see comic books now, they're doing this again. I've seen, like, I don't know how many Snickers and Twix ads that are kind of laid out like this, where all of a sudden I'm reading a Batman comic and I see Flash, Superman, and Wonder Woman stop a guy just because he's hungry.
We will be doing some Justice League cream pie. I meant, fruit
whoa,
pie.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
Some fruit pie advertisements. So Batman gets into a spacecraft that he's built to look like the Batplane. He's picked up...
It's his reward for saving Millman.
He's picked up on how to pilot these things very quickly. And since there's no atmosphere, he has to put on his space goggles for air.
Oh, now I can breathe!
Oh, thank God. So they fly off, and they're going to...
I think they're just tailing one of the Comet test pilots and just can't keep track of them.
Yeah, so he's been sabotaged. Don't correct me.
And sabotage?
Sabotage.
And at the same time, his craft has been sabotaged. Pirates are coming, and they're on their radar. Pirates are coming. So Batman and Robin in their bat ship come over. They attach to the test plane, or the test ship, and they drag it away. And to conceal themselves, they cover themselves and the other ship in radiation, so they look like a comet.
In harmless radiation.
They're killing each other. The way they use radiation in this is like the way that people honestly thought of it. They didn't see it as much of a danger as it really is. And oh my god, they're just going to burn from the inside out.
So they are able to chase after them and chase them into the police line. And then as they're going to return home, they notice that somebody has put a bat signal on the moon.
And Roger, or whatever his name is, probably wants them back there. Do they not have radios on these things? It's the future. You don't have a cell phone?
Also, it's the fucking moon.
It seems like a really bad way to get somebody's attention, because how are you going to pinpoint that accurately?
So the sabotage is struck again, and the ship that Milkman was going to use in the space race, get it, was actually, this is years before space race, has been sabotaged. And so he has no way to
win the race,
which is going to give him like publicity, so his company is going to go under. And Batman's like, oh, you can just use mine.
It's your latest model. You let me build it.
And so they get into it, and all of a sudden they've been sabotaged too.
And they drift into this graveyard of lost ships, and they notice that their fuel, which they carry their fuel tank in the cabin, that also seems rather odd. Like, it's easily able to be opened and accessible. So they have this radiation fuel pod or whatever in the cabin, but it's been filled with dust. So the idea is, and this is actually a smart one, is they're going to go to all these derelict ships, and hopefully they're not going to see too many corpses.
Yeah, it's going to be full of corpses.
it's a literal graveyard. And they grab whatever fuel they can from the other ships. They mix it around real good because it's radiation. They're fine. And they start their race back again. And the way they finish this race and they get first place, even though they've lost, you know, hours and hours and hours, is they fly too close to the sun.
I thought that they were going to, like, I thought this
go
was going to be
it?
Like, no, I thought this was going to be like a crazy slingshot around the sun.
It was just real close.
Like using the gravity as, like, you know, they have in like different star tracks and stuff like that. Although that does lead to time travel. Again.
Time
so,
science.
But no, they just don't get crispied up. It's instead of Voyage Home, it's The Descent from season 6 of Next Generation, where they're trying to escape from the Borg in the corona of a sun.
You nerd.
I know. I knew that pretty good. So they get everybody together, and Batman's like, I know who did it. Turn off the lights.
Well, at least they won the race. So they saved the company in the future, where this doesn't matter.
Where you could argue that, like, they're hypnotized, so technically it didn't happen at all.
Did they actually go anywhere? They imply that they're transported.
They imply that they are transported, but that's why the reason they can't take off their outfits.
So they get back, and they have a big meeting with everybody, and they're like, hey, we know everyone's been handling radiation, but if we shut the lights off, we'll know who messed with our fuel. Even though and they see that their engineer is glowing. So, like, okay, you're the culprit. We know that you've been the bad guy. And he confesses, I've been taking bribes from another company to
sabotage. How often do you think we've ended one of these episodes with somebody just going, all right, I'll confess?
More than we should.
That's a lot.
But they catch him by he's literally glowing. But everyone should be glowing. The Millman was blasted with front rocket thrusters by Batman. Batman and Robin were going to a bunch of ships and grabbing whatever radiation fuel they have. Their cockpits have the fuel container in them.
They did show
everyone
they were in spacesuits at the time, though.
Yeah, but everyone should be glowing because in the cockpit they have the fuel, too.
So Robin starts to feel dizzy, and they decide that Nichols is drawing them back to their own time, so they change back their costume.
I don't know why he messed up, but he lets them stay a week in the future?
Yeah.
That's oddly explained. Like, you don't know if time's moving faster for them than it is for Nichols. But he brings them back, and they change back into their regular street clothes because they've been Batman and Robin for a week. So they're probably smelling real good. Before Nichols calls them fully back, they're changing their street clothes. And he says, I'm really sorry for blundering so bad and leaving you there for a week into the future. They could have been anywhere. They could have been dead. It could have been nuclear waste zone. Like, you have no idea. And they just blow it off. Dick Grayson gets his one you know, one line and everything, and says, "Well, we're just gonna give up on Joker."
But he says the one thing we learned is that the Joker will be a reformed character 100 years from now.
His descendant.
But in the meantime, he's an outlaw. They didn't learn that at all. They just learned that like his son will.
Yeah, for all you know, well, it's 100 years in the future. So his father's father, something like that, had a really terrible childhood. For all you know. And the fact that the Joker looks like that throughout, or Joker's descendant looks like that 100 years later, is astounding. It's just, I really like board shorts, and I really just like the silliness of having a bat ship in space and everyone having these weird, like, Flash Gordon outfits and everything like that. But the time science doesn't fully get me, and the stupid mistakes like radiation.
The whole thing is that they just wanted to look at the Joker's descendants, or ancestors, and then we forgot all about that and went on space races, so... So that's going to do it for another thrilling issue of Superstitious and Cowardly. But what's in store next issue? Retcons! Yes, 10 years later, it seems the writers decide to revise some backstories. We take a quick step back into the 40s with 1948's The Origin of Batman from Batman 47, before getting back into the 50s with The Secret Life of Catwoman from Batman 62, and The Man Behind the Red Hood from Detective Comics 168, both from 1951. I'm sure a few of you can guess who's under the red hood. It's Jason Todd. We have a lot of fun episodes coming up, but I still haven't finalized what we're going to be looking for in this era before we move on to the 60s new look era. I'm calling on all my Robbins regulars to send your suggestions. John, why don't you tell them how they can get a hold of us?
You can find us on Twitter. We are at SACBatPod. You can also use that hashtag to get a hold of us and let us know any suggestions or if you have art or anything, really. Or you can email us at sac.alfred@gmail.com.
You pretty much get on the show if you do that.
Guaranteed. 100% guaranteed at this point in time. Yep. SAC episodes.
Although, to be fair, I listened to our last episode that we released the other day, and we haven't suggested that yet. So maybe in the next episode, we'll start getting some.
SAC episodes are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. You can get a full list from our website listed in the description below. And with that, I have been John Pfeiffer.
I've been Chris Winia. Keep watching the stars.
I want to turn you up a little bit. I want to turn me up a little bit.
Turn me on, John.
That's going in the end.
Yes, it will.